Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Jerry Reinsdorf, when I first got into baseball, I've never told this story before, and I like Jerry very much, and I'm sorry, Jerry, but here it comes. He sat me down. I was 32 years old, just in baseball for my first of 18 years, and he said, you know what? Here's my best advice to you. Finish in second place every single year. Because your fans will say, wow, we've got a shot, we're in it. But there's always the carrot left. There's always one more step to take.
Jerry really stepped up.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of David Sampson. That's audio from the Mystery Crate podcast with Dan Lebatard. And David joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram hotline, home of the real deal. David, of course, CBS Sports, CBS HQ MLB analyst, former Marlins president. He was on Survivor, David, one of my favorite shows.
Know that.
And
yeah,
you can follow him on Twitter at David P. Sampson. Good morning, David. How are you?
Morning, David.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Are you surprised at how this that story you told has taken legs, especially here in Chicago, and the reaction that you've received on Twitter?
Well, you know, the story is true, and I don't find it to be a bad story. Jerry is someone who is a mentor of mine for many, many years. I've known him since I was actually a little boy. I met him when he was the owner of the Bulls, and I was a fan at Knicks games when I was torturing Jerry Krause. Like Robin Thicker, or that crazy
Robin
guy.
Robin Thicker, yeah, of course, the Washington based attorney.
Exactly, that's back in the day. But
yeah.
No, so listen, here's the thing: tanking only became a thing after I got into baseball. I always thought that it was a great plan to keep trying and to never be really bad, and to keep looking like and hoping that you can make it and win a division or become a wild card. And only later, when the Astros started it and lost 100 games 3 years in a row, and even then I didn't agree with that plan because it was brutal when the Astros were losing all those games, and it was hard for any owner to take that. So I don't see anything wrong with what he told me, but the fact is, when he told me that the White Sox had finished in second place 4 years in a row right before he told me that, so I get why that was in his head.
But David, you're in the media now, and you've been in the spotlight for a long time. Surely you anticipated how something airing a story at this time would potentially harm Jerry's reputation for being committed to winning. Wouldn't you see that? Because it has. And I think that with Sox fans, after seeing that, and even though it was 18 years ago, it bothers a lot of people.
Well, the fact is that Jerry has as many rings as I do, winning it in 05 with Ozzie, and I won it in 03, with Beckett and Jack McKeon. But here's why fans in Chicago shouldn't think anything bad about Jerry at all. It's not easy, not just in his division, but in baseball in general. You have to look at revenue, and you can't expect him to lose money running a team. You shouldn't have to lose money running a team. And when he is building the White Sox and trying to win, you also have to be realistic. And so he has not done anything, in my opinion, that would make him a bad owner or a cheap owner at all. I know that that is not the case. So I have nothing but respect for him. Now, the story is the story, and the story is real, and here's why I was disappointed that he said he didn't recall it. I guess that's not a denial of it. I don't recall what I did yesterday, so I get that. But from a strategic standpoint, that was the thing to do back then. I don't think he would say that now, which he agreed that he doesn't say that now. And right now the White Sox, to me, are rebuilding. This is an important offseason for them as they decide how far they're going to rebuild or whether they're going to start it back up.
Did you see Steve Stone came after you pretty hard on Twitter?
Yeah, I that I ignored that. That doesn't mean anything to me at all. I don't recall meeting him, and even if I did, he didn't even spell my name right, so I couldn't take that too seriously. But I also know who pays his paychecks and keeps his lights on, so I recognize what he has to do. There's an agenda. Anyone associated with the team, even many people in my position in the media have an agenda, but I just say it how it is, unfiltered, and it's just business to me. It's really nothing personal at all.
David, knowing Jerry as long as you have and as well as you do, and knowing his sense of humor, knowing his sarcasm, is it possible that he was being sarcastic or he was kidding around and said this in jest?
No, it was not said in jest. And it was not as though, you know, he was bringing to me the three tablets of the 15 commandments, like History of the World Part 1, if I can make an old movie reference. This was a conversation where we were just talking when I was first getting into the game. And I just remember it because I remember that I thought about that all through my career. That's how I know. I've told that story before many, many times. I don't know that it was that I'd ever told it publicly, though. But I know privately I told that story because it was a meaningful thing that someone I looked up to had said to me, and it made perfect sense to me.
I'm curious, why was it so meaningful to you? Because he was saying, don't win, just finish second? Or because...
No. Obviously, you have to understand, he was not saying, don't win. Let me be clear. Ideally, you are always in it. Now, of course, when you are finishing in second place, there is a chance that a good streak, you finish in first place and you make the playoffs, or in second place as a wild card team. That was always inherent in the conversation. It was really an anti-tanking conversation before the concept of tanking was something that we ever talked about as a word and as a concept. That's how I looked at it. And looking back, that's exactly how I think about it. It was, hey, if things hit right and you are competing and finishing in second place, you have a chance. Now, let's look at what's happened in Chicago as an example. All the buildup to the Cubs winning the World Series in 16, it was like a fever pitch. And you can't tell me that in Chicago there's the same feeling, the same anxiety, the same anticipation about a second World Series as there was about a first. Do you agree with that at least?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, the first one you waited so long for, the second one obviously is not going to be 108
right.
years.
But I think that, you know, I've said this many times, David. I have a son who is 15 years old, and he's been a big Sox fan the majority of his life. He doesn't remember them being over 500. So if the idea is to finish in second place, they haven't done a very good job of it.
Listen, I got to tell you, I have a son who was born in 2003. He was alive for the World Series with a pacifier in diapers, and he is going to go to college, and I'm not in the game anymore, and the Marlins will never have made it back to the playoffs. So I get it, and I think about that every day, and I think about a generation of kids both in Miami and in Chicago, but there's many communities where that is the case. Seattle is an example in baseball, and it's difficult. It was my job, and I feel every day after 18 years that making the playoffs one time, that doesn't make me successful, but I certainly tried, and we never tanked. We may have rebuilt, but we tried to rebuild quickly. But this three-year tanking that goes on, I don't know how to stomach it. As an executive, it may be the right thing, but as a fan, I didn't know how to stomach it, and I never lost my fandom even when I was running the team for that long.
David, have you heard from Jerry or anybody with the White Sox, or do you feel it's important to reach out to explain yourself to the degree that you're explaining yourself today?
Not at all. Jerry knows exactly what happened. We've spoken since I've been out of the game. I may call him and wish him a happy new year or an easy fast for Yom Kippur coming up tomorrow, but that I call him, we speak on his birthday. But no, this is not something where I would expect. I understand why he had to do a statement, but I also, if you look at the statement he did, that was not a denial statement. That was not a, who is this guy? I have no idea what he's talking about. This was a, I don't recall statement. And that is not a bad way to go. But I also know that eventually the proof is in the pudding when you run a team. Either you win or you don't. And either you are tanking or you're not. And you can't hide it. You can't call it something else. I know the Marlins under Derek Jeter called it, we're retooling. We're never going to call it rebuilding, or we're never going to call it tanking. But eventually everyone understands what's happening.
I don't know if you saw Jack McDowell was also on Twitter and claimed his tweet was, guys, if you go back to posts from about a year ago, I pointed this out. Jerry, he said he, meaning Jerry, told me to my face the same quote.
Well, I would call that corroboration. I've never spoken to Jack, but it doesn't need corroboration. I'm not divulging the nuclear codes here, right? I mean, I'm not doing something that will stop cancer from being cured. We're talking about running a business and the best way to both maximize profit, increase the value of your asset, and try to get as many rings as possible. And to the extent those are mutually exclusive, not many owners would choose rings over bankruptcy.
How do you remember your time with Ozzie Guillen? You hired him and then you fired him.
I just remember when I was sitting at a table and I got a call from my PR guy who said, you may need to get up because Ozzie just complimented Fidel Castro. And I saw the season and the new ballpark and basically everything falling through my hands, and there was nothing I could do. It was that's something you just can't talk about in Miami. So I remember the excitement when we brought in Ozzie, and I remember the 2012 season as the worst season of my career and the most disappointing season.
What do you think of Joe Girardi? He is being interviewed by the Cubs this week. He isn't the favorite for the job. They're probably going to give it to David Ross, but you have firsthand knowledge of Joe. What do you make of him?
Yeah, Joe is an interesting guy in that I don't view him as someone who enjoys working closely with members of the front office. Now, he will say that's only because I didn't want to work closely with you all. I'd be happy to work closely with someone else. But at the end of the day, he views the clubhouse as his clubhouse. The lineup is his lineup. The batting order is his batting order. And that's really not common anymore in the game where GMs are telling managers who to play, where to play them, how to shift defensively, basically everything, including which players to rest on certain days. There's so much analytics involved. And Theo has earned that right in his mind and actually has. When you bring a World Series to the Red Sox and Cubs, I'd say you pretty much get to be in charge, and if not, head to Cooperstown. So I don't know how the two of them could ever coexist. I think David Ross is a much better fit because I think he's both better in the clubhouse and better managing up and down. And these days, that is critical for a manager to be able to do.
So, David, before we let you go, how would you characterize just your overall reaction to the reaction your comments created? Amused, annoyed, somewhere in between?
Neither. I just talk about things that have happened. I tell stories that are real, and it's never anything personal. And I have a show that's starting on CBS called Nothing Personal with David Sampson, and it's a show where you just talk about issues that are happening, and I can give a unique perspective because I've been in the game, I've experienced so many things and learned so many things, and I can actually tell people actual things versus speculation, which is what most people in the media have to do.
You got any more Jerry Reinsdorf stories?
Oh, God, I got a million. I was with him for 18 years, so he is a very interesting man, an amazing philanthropist, an amazing family man. We spend more time talking about family and about being a good father and being a husband and being an owner and what it means, the responsibility he felt. And I loved the NBA as my first love. So Michael Jordan basically ruined my life, literally ruined my life, as I am and was a huge Knicks fan. And Patrick Ewing doesn't have a ring solely because of Michael Jordan. And then, of course, Hakeem Olajuwon, those 2 years of Michael's retirement, quote unquote. But it's Jerry and I have known each other since I was a little boy.
David, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks,
and your
David.
Candor.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Hey, have a great day. Speak again.
You
Take
too.
Care.
Okay, that is David Sampson, and we did invite Jerry Reinsdorf on the program. Hopefully, he'll take us up on it.
That'd be great. It'd be great to have a conversation. I think that his statement obviously speaks for itself, but it would be better to hear it from his own mouth and to hear it from him, and because these were comments that are 18 years old, and to some people it's a non-story. To others, it's troublesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.